Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is half an hour also of cricket chat. We're going to talk about playing cricket. We're going to talk about coaching cricket. And hopefully by the end of it, you'll have a few ideas, a few tips, a few tricks to help you out whether you coach or play yourself. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the director of cricket at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hi, how are you guys? You all right?
Yeah, very good. Hat's on the side of my head.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a jaunty angle.
Jaunty.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello there, how are we doing?
Very good, thanks, very good.
Nice to hear the hat's on a jaunty angle. That always makes for a good start to the day.
Yeah, it does. It's difficult to do with headphones on, but I'll style it out. I think I pull it off. Fashion aside, though, let's talk a little bit about cricket. And I saw an article this week about captaincy. So I thought we can have a little chat about that, how captaincy's changed in recent years and how, especially at professional level, the number of support staff has gone up and the amount of responsibility that rests on a captain has gone down. It's perhaps changed, at least, certainly at the highest level. So maybe starting with that as a starting point and moving on to maybe club, school, academy level cricket as well, how do you feel the role of the captain has changed, and is it been diminished, or is it more like it's more focused on the actual captaincy and less on the side things because there's more support people around, even at lower levels? What do we think?
I think it's different rather than diminished. Certainly working with some pretty good international captains in my time, ranging from somebody like a Graham Smith, who, you know, his role was massive, wasn't it? I mean, not only did he run a cricket team from a captaincy perspective, even though he had support staff, he almost balanced the whole of the country's weights expectations, and obviously with some of the political ramifications in terms of selection and you know, it becoming more and more of a rainbow nation in terms of the players that were on the pitch as well as the people that were supporting the games and on the sidelines. I thought, you know, that you can't say that his role's been diminished, it's just different. And then you look at somebody like Michael Vaughan and Andrew Strauss, who had a lot of support staff. I was one of them, but a lot of support staff around them. But would I say that their role was diminished? No, I would just say that it was different, and the role of support staff is to take on their own individual areas, but also try and dovetail that in an integrated fashion. And it might mean that there are less man management conversations that go on from the captains than you would have had in the past, because, you know, you've got two or three voices that can be doing that rather than just the one. But to me, is it diminished? Absolutely not. I would say that it's just different to the days when maybe Mike Brearley would have run the side, when he was basically the man that did everything.
Yeah, I don't think many people would agree, even the dyed-in-the-wool traditionalist, I don't think many people would agree that the captain... It's helpful that the captain needs to do everything, you know, arrange the team bus in the morning and make sure that people are having the necessary amount of time in nets, and every single detail needs to be organised by the captain. So it's definitely not it's definitely fewer things, but maybe more focused on the things that are actually important that the captain can do. So, Lavers, how do you see that reflected in club and school cricket? Has the role of the captain changed at that level as well, or is it still all hands to the pumps?
Well, just before I get onto that bit, I wouldn't necessarily say it is fewer things, because if you look at the media involvement of a international captain these days, it would be, I would suggest, 10 times that of 20 years ago. So there's a shift in the involvement, but the workload...
Good point.
And the... is going to be fairly similar, or so, if not more, but it's definitely a different challenge, isn't it? It's a different set of tasks that are laid in front of you, and they'll be different in every country. And obviously, Gareth has said there, you've got people at the same time with Smith versus Vaughan or Stroud, they're operating in a similar era, and they're going to have their own way of their own structure they're working under and stuff. So, within school and club cricket. Probably quite an interesting one, because often you kind of categorise them in a similar way in terms of ability level. So a strong first 11 at a school will be full of good club cricketers who are playing Premier League cricket or there or thereabouts, yet the environment probably is a little bit different, and so the captaincy is probably slightly different for a number of reasons. Firstly, as it alludes to in the article that we were kind of brought, that was brought up in the first place, a lot of clubs probably won't have a hands-on coach there all the time who is going to have his input and have his involvement or be able to offer his advice along the way. So that's very different to a school where you're going to have a coach there, you would have thought, all the time. So you don't have that. And also, even if you do have a coach, the leadership of a group when everyone is effectively under 18 and then there's a coach who's over 18, rightly or wrongly, will probably, people will look towards that older person as a leader, whether they do that during the games or not, but just in the general day-to-day kind of training and running of the side and those kind of things, just purely because they're a bit older, which in the club environment, again, if you do have a coach, they're going to be possibly of a similar age to the person who's captaining the side. So it is a slightly different dynamic there. The other thing that you'd consider is, and Gareth will have his own perspective on this, I'm sure, as well, is what the role of a club captain or a club side is and what the role of a school side is. And most cricket clubs would say, up to a certain level, they want to make sure that there's an opportunity for people to go out there and enjoy cricket, and hopefully they'll do quite well. Towards the top end of club cricket, it will become more and more about the win and about winning. Whereas in school cricket, again, it'll be different school to school, but in some circumstances, it'll be more about improving individuals, improving players, and improving how they can work within a team. And the byproduct of that would be the win, as opposed to focusing solely on, we must do everything to win this individual game, because there'll be times when you will ask captains, or you will try and get captains to maybe structure their own batting lineup or do it in a way that might be more challenging and not the ideal to get the win on the day, but it gives people opportunities they might not normally get. You might be looking to give people opportunities in different positions in the field, or in terms of when they're going to bowl, and get people giving, having different roles within the bowling lineup. So the purpose of the side will change a little bit between club cricket and school cricket as well. So there is a bit of variation, and again, that's obviously different from the professional game, where the win is becoming even more important there. So yeah, quite a bit of variation, I would have thought.
And certainly, speaking from my experience, coaching senior guys a little bit more than junior guys, is that you can, as a coach, you can sort of take some of the things away from the captain that they're not particularly interested in doing, and help them out. And we're lucky at our club in that we have, I'm coaching there, and also we have a chairman who's heavily involved as well. And so between the two of us, we can do a lot of that off-field stuff that, you know, if you go back to that example, that Mike Brearley example, where there's a lot of off-field stuff going on that the modern professional captain doesn't have to do. Well, certainly at our club, you know, we can handle a lot of the category of off-field stuff. And certainly from my point of view, you know, doing warm-ups with guys, and also analysing games and coming up with ideas for tactics that the coach can use, and we can work together to sort of say, well, look, this is what happens when we're playing at our best, and here's a bit of evidence towards that. And, you know, what do you think? You know, do you think we can use this in the next game? All that kind of thing is feeding into the captain, and then the captain can go off and concentrate on his job of making sure that the side are doing the best that they can do when they're out on the field.
But there will,
that's
be,
the change I see.
Yeah, but there will be clubs won't have the luxury, just as we've got in our school and you know, you have in your club, David, of having those people around. And certainly when I played my last year of club cricket, which was 2009 or something like that, when I went back to it, I was amazed at how the club structure was exactly the same as when I played the previous time in 2001, and actually the club captain was the guy that was doing everything, and it took me three or four games to then make a suggestion, using my coach's head, I suppose, that a few of us took on different types of leadership to take a little bit off of a guy that was doing it. So You know, for example, I would, at the end of the game, I would sit down whilst we have a jug of cider. I'd sit down and say, right, can we just make a note on each of the players that we played against today? Because we're going to play them later in the season, and that might give us a head start when they first come to the wicket or they first start to bowl, about how we go about playing them again. So that was my responsibility. Another person took on warm-ups and so on and so forth, just to take that off of the guy that was tossing the coin, getting the team together, washing the whites and all of that stuff that we see in a lot of clubs still, you know, which is the old-fashioned way, and there's nothing wrong with it. But my question would be, can other people take on some responsibilities to make sure that captain can be focused on ultimately making good decisions on the pitch and managing players around the week leading up into the game?
And that's definitely a mindset thing, because it's very easy for, if you're the type of person who takes on responsibilities and enjoys it and goes for it, then you can very easily in club cricket find yourself doing everything in a very short amount of time. But that isn't sustainable in any long-term or even a medium-term context. So being able to break that out, and people, A, being comfortable offering to do those things without being prompted, and B, not being offended if someone else prompts them to do them, is a really good culture to have in your club, and say, right, look, I only need you to do one thing for me, and it's just this. If you can do that for me, it takes a bit of pressure off the captain, and we can all get a little bit better as a result of it. So if you have that culture in the club of spreading the workload around, then yeah, you can sort of account for that without having to worry too much about you know, who's the coach, who's the captain, who's the director of cricket, who's the, you know, who's the chairman. You just get on with things, and everyone has their little job to do, and they get on with it, and everything gets done a lot more quickly and more efficiently.
And we even did it within the international setup a little bit. Michael Vaughan, I remember, stood up and said to the whole of his team, he said, I might be tossing the coin and I am the captain of a team, but I need leaders throughout. So if at any stage you think you can take on a role that will help us to become more effective, then please come and see me, and I'd be more than happy to give you that responsibility. And two or three people did exactly that. And I remember when Strauss was captain, one of the things that he struggled with a little bit in his first few games was having a sort of a broader view on the game, and maybe coming up with some slightly out-of-the-box tactics wasn't necessarily his forte. So he recognised in Stuart Broad he had somebody that could see the game from a completely different perspective, and would often come up with something that Strauss would appear to be harebrained, but actually was probably the jigsaw piece that fitted at that particular time. So they had a lot of success doing that. You know, I think whoever's doing that captaincy role at whatever level, I think look around you and see what else is available, what other skills and attributes and characteristics are in the room, because often they go untapped, and all that means is you end up doing more and more and more. And in terms of length of tenure, I think we're seeing captaincy's length of tenure is dropping nowadays across the board, aren't we? At club level, that definitely is the case. But even at international level, we always support that is the case. But can we manage ourselves better as leaders to take on the characteristics, attributes of the people that sit next to us in the change room, as well as the people that might be there to coach us or to support us?
I'm just going to finish this section with a little piece of news. It's regarding the Pathan brothers, the famous Indian players who are opening a new academy in Raipur, and the CAP, as it's called, CAP, Cricket Academy of Pathans, is of course going to be powered by Pitch Vision. So they're looking to give back to the game, a game that's given them a lot. And one of the big ways they're going to do that is by the statistics and analysis that they can do through Pitch Vision systems. So good luck to CAP, which has launched this week. Time now for some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show or readers to the Pitch Vision website. And how this works is we pick out a couple of questions, do our best to answer them, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll tell you other ways to get in touch with the show towards the end. But for now, let's get the first question. It's from Seth. And Seth says, I am the chief coach of a second division club in Kolkata. My problem is how to protect players from different ideas from too many club officials present at the match. At the moment, players are mentally distracted and diverted from their original task in hand. Please advise how I can handle such a situation. Sounds like a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, and all of these people that will be giving ideas to the players will be doing it from a complete position of but trying to be well-meaning. And that's the first thing I think you've got to accept, is that any bit of advice that comes to you, however it is delivered, whether it's delivered effectively or not, it is given to you with the best intentions and in mind. And sometimes it's not easy to accept that, really, when you've got so many different things coming at you. And it is all well intentioned. So that'd be the first thing, Seth. And I think you can train your players to see it in that way as well, because if they see it in that way, that might be one of the distractions that goes out the window straight away, and it makes it easier for them to mentally deal with. And then the second thing really is to ask you and put it back on you and say, well, what are your goals? What are your objectives for the season? Because if the things that are coming from the outside relate to that objective, either in a conscious fashion because they know what that objective is, or a subconscious fashion, fashion because they've just lucked out and managed to say something to you that does hit your objective, then take it on board. You know, if it hits your team objective. Other than that, if it falls outside of any team objective or anything that is a tactic within your team, then I would say ignore it. And then again, you've got a filter mechanism for what you allow in and what you ignore. And sometimes, you know, even ignoring a good bit of advice, if it's an off track bit of advice, then it can get in the way. So I would say you might want to reflect on that at the end of a season. But yeah, if it's in line with what you're trying to do, then let it in and review it and have a conversation about it. But if it's not, then I would just keep right on your track that you're going on.
It's a problem that happens a lot more these days, isn't it, Lavers? Purely because there's a lot more people around who feel they can offer advice, and whether they are in an official capacity or whether they're just, you know, a passerby who's shouting out a comment. They've always existed, but I feel like it's more than ever now, especially good players. They get exposed to so many coaches and different people at different levels. It is a difficult thing to manage, and it's a skill, isn't it, to be able to manage that?
Yeah, I think inevitably, and this kind of covers a lot of different environments, but whether it's in a school environment like myself and Gareth are day to day, where the best intentioned member of staff who maybe does or maybe doesn't know a lot about cricket is still in a position of responsibility or position of authority, I guess, and anything they say will still be taken on board by a young cricketer. Or you're in the situation we talked about there, where there are other members of the backroom staff of a cricket club, whether they're off-field administrators or whatever, or supporters or whoever it might be. There are going to be a lot of different ideas coming in from a lot of different angles. So I suppose the first thing to consider is, are we gonna fight them or are we gonna work with them? And then in doing that, how are we gonna manage that process? So rather than just saying to the player and trying to manage the player and how they deal with this advice, can we try and give these people who want to have their input a method of having their input? And if you can give them a method of having their input and that avenue comes via yourself, then you can help in that filtering process as well. So you can have these people who want to have their ideas and they want to add value to the side and they want the best for the players and the club or whoever it might be. Then you've got a bit of a relationship where everyone's pulling in the same direction, but not only can you filter the advice, but maybe you can educate them in why you would filter the advice in that way. So I would try and include them in the process as much as possible. Obviously, we've got to be wary of the scale of the project and how many people we're talking about catering to or working with in this case. But try and include them, try and educate them to make sure that their input and the timing of their input is really valuable and really useful, and it's not just creating more noise and more confusion and more ideas that aren't actually going to give clarity when it comes to the direction that a player or a team are looking to go.
And it's always going to slip through somewhere, isn't it? That's a great idea, Lavers. I love that. It's sort of giving people a way of providing feedback that they know is going to get to the person is a really good thing. There'll always be moments, though.
There will. So, I agree with that. If you can have a mechanism, I think that would be good. But ultimately, we've got to work with the player, haven't we? I mean, that's our foremost. As a coach here, Seth's the coach of this second division team in Kolkata, which are probably a blooming good side. If I know cricket in Kolkata, I should imagine they're fairly good. His responsibility is to the players and to that team. And I think we can do a bit of an education piece around it. And as I say, if you know where you're going, both as a team and as an individual player, if you've got clarity in how you go about your process and something comes in that can add value to that clarity, then take it on board. If it's something that comes in that sits outside the line of your clear plan, then why don't you park it until a good time, maybe the off season, where you can have a review and reflect on it. That would be my approach, because otherwise you spend so much time listening and taking it on board and pondering whether it could work or it couldn't work, and by the time you've done that, you're two or three more games down there and you haven't performed, and all of a sudden you're on a bit of a downward spiral. So I would have a bit of a framework around myself and my team about what we let in and what we don't let in. Always do it politely, though. That's the thing, and I've learned probably the hard way a couple of times where in my younger career that you know, you've got to make sure that you do that politely. And at the time, I didn't necessarily understand the notion that all feedback that comes back in is valuable and is given in best intention. And I challenged at the time the intention of some of that feedback, but actually it was well intentioned. So if you take that on board, be really polite back, and then at a time, you know, maybe reflect on it and go, you know, did I get that right at the time? But reflection is something you do need time for, and often the off season the best time to do that.
And it's almost a compliment, actually, compliment to the players, compliment to the coach, if a lot of advice is coming in, because what tends to, I tend to find that the better a team or a player is doing, the more advice that becomes available to them. And the worse that someone is doing, the longer that goes on, the more the silence grows, especially from people who are just passing. But you know, for passers by in the broadest sense of the word, you know, people who have a low stake, but have something they want, that, you know, that they'll be more likely to offer their words of wisdom to better players who are doing well, rather than not so good players who are not doing very well. So It's almost a piece of praise, and as you said, Gareth, as long as you know how to politely reject or accept, I suppose. But you know, if you do decide it's not for you, as long as you know how to politely do it, you know, a little thank you goes a long way. Even if you say thank you, that's not for me, it still goes a long way, because at least someone realizes that they've been listened to, they've been heard. And a decision has been made. You know, you'll always get sensitive souls, of course, but you know, you do everything you can to protect the egos of people, and you'll do fine. So, yeah, not an easy one, but one that is a skill, definitely, that is needed more than ever. Next question's from Raghav, and Raghav has possibly the ultimate question in cricket: how can I regain form if good form is lost?
Yeah, so I suppose the question would be: is there such thing as form? Is it a word? You know, we talked about terms last week, didn't we, and what they actually mean. I think actually in hindsight this would have been a really good one to chuck in there. So some coaches that I've worked with have a notion that there is no such thing as form. Andy Flower would be one of those. He doesn't necessarily believe in form, because when you're out of form, it's often that some of your fundamental basics have gone awry, or you're not adhering to them, or they're not being practiced enough, whatever those basics may be. And when you are in form, it's because you're being diligent to those basics. Now, you know, we've seen on television over the last couple of years, Sky Sports, and you can get it on the internet now, have interviewed a number of the top batters, a number of the top bowlers in the world about what they do. to prepare themselves to be able to perform. And if I was to encapsulate all of that, whether it's Glenn McGrath or Virat Kohli or AB de Villiers or anybody else for that matter, or Kevin Peterson way back years ago when I was there, they did one on him as well, is that what they end up doing is that they end up saying, this is what I do to prepare myself at my best, and these are my basics that I need to adhere to. And when they do that, then they're in periods of really good form. And of course, the best players are the ones that, that stick to what they do and make sure that they're covering every area that they need to cover in order to score runs on a more consistent basis. So I'm a believer, as of Andy, that if you do the right thing, you understand your game and you work on those things diligently, then form doesn't happen. And as a result of that, you might have a series of low scores. And KP was brilliant at this. If he had a couple of low scores on the bounce, he would always say, as long as I'm doing the things that I do in practice well enough, then an opportunity is going to come along very soon where I'm going to score big. So he never used to get really down whenever he didn't get runs. And I thought that was a very Olympic sort of training method that he had, where if I do my preparation, then I give myself the best chance of success, and form, or whatever form is, doesn't really come into play. So I'm more of that view, to be honest. So go back, have a look at yourself when you're playing really well. Think back to what you did and what you were doing when you were playing well. Identify some key basics in your game and then practice the backside out of them. And I bet that your, and I'm doing a little inverted commas, form will return to you fairly quickly.
I've thought for a while now that I think form is something, but it's not what people think it is. I think you're right there, Gareth. I've thought for a while now that sort of the way that most people think of form is it's something that comes and goes of its own thing. You know, it's sometimes you're in form, sometimes you're not. There's not a huge amount you can do about it. It just happens. And maybe if you go to nets a couple of times, maybe you get yourself back in form, but then maybe not, you know. it's all very sort of grey, and nobody really knows exactly what it's all about. But I think it's a lot more controllable than that. I mean, there will be factors that are out of your control, but it is a lot more control about that. Lavers, do you think that there are things you can do to control your form?
Yeah, it's a really big talking point that we have when it hits the season down at school here, because a lot of, especially the younger guys, will use this word form, and they'll use it as almost a shield to hide behind. I didn't score any runs, but I'm not in form at the moment, so I wasn't expected to, and those kind of things. We've not got players in form who didn't win, but when we're in form, we'll do. And it is something that can be used just as almost a defence mechanism of protecting you from the truth. And the truth is really that you're not executing your skills well, for whatever reason, or you're not executing plans well, or you're not coming up with the right plans. And we had a long talk about it, and we spoke about it with a group of under 14, so quite young cricketers last year, who were all pretty proficient. I'd have said there's probably half the group will have played county cricket and half of them would have played district cricket in the 12 or 13, so they're all pretty proficient for 13, 14 year olds. And we came up with the idea that, and this obviously isn't a scientific basis that I want us to declare, but the form was kind of skills plus plans times confidence, which again, that's not a thing, that's an equation. It doesn't mean that that's what it is, and it's not measurable, but the idea of what the inclusive parts of form are were there. And we felt, or the boys felt, that it was, did we have our skills right? So were we moving the right way? Were we hitting the ball in the way we wanted to, and were we getting our basics right effectively, which is what Gareth has talked about in relation to a few players there. Were we doing the right things? Were we making the right plans when we're out there playing? And then were we confident in what our abilities were? And it was a little, just a little idea and a little equation that they came up with, which didn't actually have to have an outcome, and it wasn't a sum that would ever be used, and you would never put anything into that. There would never be any figures involved in it, but it would give you an idea of the things that made up form. And so when you said form wasn't good, ultimately, what we would do is we'd go, well, why isn't form good? Is it because of this? Is it because of this? Or is it because of this? And they were the three things that they felt were important to them. And other things, other people will think in a different way, but I think form is a word that needs breaking down a little bit, and it needs to have a few strands within it. And if we can decide what those strands are, then we can start to identify what form means and how it changes. And obviously, for a lot of guys, it is confidence. And confidence in their skills that they're executing well. So that's kind of the approach we've taken, that we took with that particular group last year, and it's one that removed the conversation of I'm not in form or I am in form, and took it more to something that was slightly more measurable of I'm not getting these skills right, I need to go and get them right, or I didn't have the right plan, I need to make better decisions. Or conversations like that, which are a little bit more specific and take you somewhere. They can give you a bit more direction, I suppose. So I'm not sure if that answered the actual question you started with, Dave, but it's a little bit of
It's great
discussion around what we've done at school.
Yeah, that's I love that, and I love that idea of having confidence being in there as a multiplier rather than just a simple addition to it, because. When people talk about confidence, they always talk about confidence as a feeling, but I don't think people realize that it's a feeling. They almost think it's a thing beyond them. It's not a feeling that they have, even though they say, oh, well, I'm feeling in form at the moment, or I'm feeling really out of form at the moment. The general consensus I find is that it's not considered a feeling, even though that's exactly what it is, you know? And that's why you can feel out of form and still do all right, and that's why... You know, there's a guy who played for us last year who got a hat trick, and he said it was, as he was running into a bowl, the hat trick bowl, he felt the most out of form he'd ever felt. And he still got a hat trick, managed to bowl it straight enough getting LBW. So you can feel out of form and still execute your skills pretty well, and you can feel in form and still not be doing things in quite the right way. So yeah, I'm. That's a long-winded way of saying I agree with you. Form is more of a feeling than a thing.
Yeah, I guess that relates back nicely to what we talked about last week, doesn't it? Where we don't always need to be chasing perfection. We need to chase effectiveness, and we don't have to feel perfect all the time. We don't have to execute everything perfectly, but we've got to find a way. We've got to find a method that is going to get us from 0 to 50, or from 0 to 5 overs in, or whatever it would be. And yes, it would be nice to be perfect, but we've got to find something that's going to work, really. And getting a job done is more important than anything else, really. Feeling a certain way or looking a certain way. It's, did I get the job done?
And that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, there is one more thing we need to do, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer, as you recall, were Seth's question about too many club officials giving too much advice, and Raghav's question about getting back into form. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Radabs, because I think it's a really commonly stated term, and some more understanding about what it means, and will give players more control over what they do, I think. And whilst that control doesn't guarantee success every time you go out to bat, because nobody's ever managed that in the history of the game, or nobody's ever managed to get a 5 for every time they've bowled, it gives you the best chance of success if you can take control of that and understand your basics. So I'm a big fan of that approach.
Absolutely. Congratulations, Raghav. And Gareth, if someone else was listening to the show and they were thinking about sending in a question and having their chance to win this prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. The other ways of getting in touch with us are via social media. Of course, pitchvision.com has its own platform for communication, so you can get in touch with us that way. Get yourself a free account, get in touch with us through pitchvision.com or the Pitchvision app. And you can get us on all those old-fashioned social medias like Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter at pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week by subscribing. It's free, and you can do that by searching for Pitch Vision Academy in your favourite podcast app. And if you want to get the show notes, listen to previous shows, download the show onto your computer or stream it from the web, you can do all that on the Pitch Vision website, pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the details there. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, boys.
Thanks, guys.